Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond from AMA, and I'm pleased to bring to you an important conversation about how the world's largest gold producer handled the industry's worst nightmare, a COVID-19 positive employee at one of Australia's sites. In this episode, we're joined by Amanda Baker, Vice President of Human Resources at Newmont Australia, to talk about how the company successfully navigated this situation at its Granites gold mine in the Northern Territory's Tanami Desert. You'll hear all about Newmont's decisive and safety-focused handling of this incident and how the many facets involved in supporting its employees and their families through this challenging period. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Amanda.
Thanks, Tara. It's great to talk to you today.
I'm so pleased you're joining us on this podcast. And to get us started, can you give us some background around Newmont, what it does around the world, particularly in Australia, things like the number of people it employs and where you operate?
Well, look, we are a global mining company that mines predominantly gold, and we also have some copper. We operate in four regions around the world. We have a North American region, a South American region, an African region, and the Australian region. That's where I'm based. I'm based in Australia. We have two operating gold mines, one in the Tanami Desert in the Northern Territory, and the other is in a town called Boddington, which is just south of Perth, about an hour and a half. In Australia, we've got around 3,500 employees in the region, including contractors.
Now, tell me about your background and your role at Newmont.
I was fortunate enough to have a start in the mining industry over 15 years ago in a training role in BHP is where I started. I've been very, very fortunate enough to work my way up through the ranks in predominantly HR, but I guess in those years I've had many, many sponsors that have wanted to push me to get some experiential service in the ops, so I've had some time in the ops as well. So now I'm the regional VP of HR for Newmont, and my role is to basically take Newmont's global strategy in HR for the region in areas of culture, people and systems. There's a bit of leadership development in there and much more employee relations focus, just to mention a few. And that's the sort of stuff that I'm accountable for in this role.
Sounds like a fantastic role. But for today's chat, we are focusing on the incredible handling of the COVID-19 positive employee at your Newmont Granites gold mine in Northern Territory Tanami Desert site, which earned Newmont an AMA Industry Award in the Workplace and Workplace Relation Innovation in 2021. First of all, congratulations on this accolade, and really importantly for the work that you and all of your team members at Newmont did in the really decisive and safety-focused handling of this incident. So can you start me from the beginning? Can you paint a picture of the Granites gold mine operation, so its location, how many employees, contractors, really to set the scene for us, Amanda?
I can. I might just mention that we were very humbled to receive that award from AMA, and certainly if I can extend my thanks on behalf of Newmont to all of our industry peers, whether it be gold or other commodities, everyone's reached out through this AMA network to really support us over the time. And as a collective, we've been able to share a lot of learnings with each other, and it just shows you the strength of the resources sector when the chips are down. Mm. But just getting into a little bit about Granites. Granites gold mine, it's literally the definition of a remote work site in Australia. Wow. It's 540 kilometres northwest of Alice Springs, and if you look at it on a map, it's sort of more closer to the WA border. And we run charters for flights out of our major ports being Brisbane, Darwin, Perth and Alice Springs. We have about 800 Newmont employees at that site and approximately 900 business partners. And the numbers of business partners are up at the moment. We're actually doing a major project as we're sinking a shaft at the site.
Wow. Really remote. 540 kilometres. That's incredible. And let's kind of talk about what you had in place pre the positive case in terms of practices, policies and procedures that prepared you for when this eventuated?
We've definitely learned a lot, but I thought before the event we had a pretty typical practice for COVID management on site. We had declarations for wellness. We certainly had travel restrictions from risk areas. We undertook temperature checking at airports. You know, on site there was use of PPE, social distancing. We had extremely high levels, I believe, of sanitation and, most importantly, the contact tracing. So we're pretty used to the contract tracing, and we treated every case of cold and flu as a potential COVID. So, if, you know, for example, if an employee had symptoms, they were isolated along with their close contacts.
That sounds amazing in terms of your planning and preparation, but tell us how it all unfolded. So starting from when you got the notification of a COVID-19 positive employee, you know, really talk us through the early stages, which I'm sure were vitally important as the whole process unfolded.
Yeah, it's funny. It's not funny. Yeah. we practiced this situation over and over again, and I and others, we believe we had tested out emergency response processes through the triggers that we'd had. You know, we immediately isolated the employee as soon as we were notified of the positive case, and also that work crew back to their rooms, and then we proceeded to place the entire mine into care and maintenance to understand the extent of the potential event. And what that meant was working through who was essential staff, who could care for people, but we also had to have critical support personnel to ensure that the ventilation and the mine continued to work, you know, water, pumping, those sorts of things. So it was a very intense, and we got notified at 1 o'clock in the morning. So it's all hands on deck and getting 750 people to isolate immediately into their rooms.
That's amazing. Oh my goodness. And so what's your capacity in your camp? I'd imagine that you're putting everyone in isolation, you're putting the mine into care and maintenance, but you, not only do you need the essential staff for running the mine, but you need essential staff to be looking after people that you have in isolation. So can you talk us through how all of that worked?
Yeah, so we definitely had capacity for the rooms. We put everyone back in their rooms, and I guess the first 3 or 4 days of lockdown were the hardest. Although we had had small groups of people go down into isolation groups before, you know, again, 20, 30 people, switching from a mess or galley food service to an in-room service took us a few days to arrange. It meant it wasn't ideal, but we definitely learnt from that. And then even when we got to the point where we were getting that room food service up and running, we had a little bit of a delay in getting our catering facility changed out with new staff and handed over by the Northern Territory government as a safe kitchen. So it wasn't an easy task working through those first few days as we attempted to look after those people.
So the Northern Territory government took over your food facilities, is that right? Preparation, yeah. Et cetera.
The Northern Territory Health Department came in, and thank goodness they were instrumental in our recovery. They came in with the right people to help us set up the right processes and procedures to maintain a safe environment. But what they did is, as we were changing out the kitchen staff and cleaning staff who were there at the time, so we could have potentially had them with COVID, we didn't know. Mm. They took over the kitchen, did the deep cleaning with their cleaners, and then they handed back a kitchen to a new set of staff that we flew up on a different flight to be able to service everyone. But that does take time that we weren't prepared for.
As you say, you prepare for these things, you do your emergency response, you've got the plans ready, you test them, but I'm sure the communication processes and kind of, for lack of a better word, chains of command became really important, Amanda. What did you personally take accountability for in that process?
It was very challenging. I might just mention that the communications was a huge challenge because when we had 750 people come into the system, there was a massive disruption of the 4G system on site, and it actually crashed.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so yeah, as you can appreciate, you're in your room, communications are down, you don't know when your food's going to arrive, you can't talk to your family.
You don't know if you've got COVID. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You couldn't even distract yourself with your Netflix. It was a hard time for our employees. We're just so grateful for people's understanding of patients at that time. But my role specifically was to look after, I guess, leader messaging. There was obviously all the cleaning and catering was in my remit as well. And then just working through how were we logistically going to get out of this. I was a part of a broader team at that time to, you know, what happens at what time, what day. But again, NT Health couldn't be more supportive of the help they gave us to assemble our team to make sure that we had the safety team, the emergency response team were controlling on the ground. We had one of our managers assume a lead contact role on site, and we flew up an emergency services officer from another site to be that liaison between the leadership team that was off-site, me being part of that, and the Northern Territory Health and Police.
Amanda, did you have much issue getting people? Like, you talked about changing out the catering and the cleaning crew. You talk about key personnel that you needed to get up there. Were people reluctant to go up there because you had a positive case?
Yeah, people did come. It's interesting. I had one of my team, a HR advisor, who was just who had worked at that site. She was very committed to whatever you need, I need to get up there. I know the people. Same with our emergency response team. We did find it a little tricky to mobilise catering and cleaning staff on short notice, but it was more around the short notice aspect than getting COVID. We did explain all of the protocols that we had set up with NT Health before they even got on the plane to ensure that they felt cared for when they were flying up. So they came out of Perth at that time.
Yeah, wow, gosh. You talked about the 4G system crashing. You talked about the changing out. You talked about having to basically integrate the NT Health Department into, you know, basically what is a crisis situation. Apart from those kind of major things, what do you think were some of the other biggest challenges that you had to really confront in the first few days as it unfolded?
I certainly feel that wellbeing was one of the biggest issues to face. People weren't sure how long they would be locked down for. Some people had already done 11 days on site before they were told that they would have to spend 14 days in their room. We were coming up to school holidays. There were people that were about to have babies arrived. It was really the focus on our well-being. And what we did as a team and in HR, we assembled a lot of off-site support through various team members. They weren't just HR, they were health and safety and other people that really wanted to get in and help. But they rang family members to see how they were. We contacted as many people as we could with permission to understand their well-being at home. And, you know, your well-being at home is how you are outside. So if everything's okay at home, then the person was feeling better about being in isolation in their room. Some families had particular hardship at that time, and we offered whatever support we could to ensure that they had everything they needed to the best of our ability in that period.
Because it's 750 people, and I imagine they all had, you know, differing personal circumstances, whether it's at the beginning of their swing or at the end of their swing, you know, whatever it was, there would have been just that is going to be difficult. But before I get to that, about the first few days, with having to have to isolate 750 people and they haven't got internet access, how did you manage just communicating with people and keeping people reassured and calm as they basically waited to find out, A, if they had COVID, and B, how long they would be in isolation for?
We had to get back to basics on that one. We had to pretend like we didn't have any technology. So we resorted to lots of leadership communication through letter drops, and we were doing that daily and sometimes twice daily to rooms. We even had socially distanced communications. We'd have people that were allowed to be out who were cleared to be out, ask people to open their doors and then speak to them so we could keep that face-to-face aspect. Every leader, though, had a job to contact every team member every day so that we could check in on them. So even the ones in their rooms, we give them lists and phone numbers to call their people in their rooms. Again, the team off-site was bringing people in their rooms as well. You can imagine everybody knows somebody up there. So we all just took turns in checking in, and some days were good, some days were bad. We even took over a channel on our closed circuit television. We called it Vince TV after our GM, who provided daily videos, which gave information as quickly as we could possibly get it as we received it.
So Vince now, not only is he general manager, he's now a TV personality. He knows how to how to broadcast. That's incredible. Okay, I want to get back to the families because I can imagine at times you may have been overwhelmed with families contacting you if they weren't able to contact their loved one on site. How did you manage the communication, or was the 4G didn't interrupt phone services?
No, it definitely interrupted phone services. Telstra were very good. They got someone out there as quickly as they could to re-establish, not the hard lines, they were fine, but, you know, within 2 days we had it all boosted and ready to go. One thing we did within the first couple of days from a regional leadership team perspective is we set up a hotline on the phone. We set up an email address, so any queries that were coming from the village that weren't getting answered from site right through to people at home, they were being filtered through an inbox that myself and my team were answering individually, so that we could, you know, if someone wasn't feeling so great or if a family member were worried about them, we could make that direct reach to the supervisor or someone on the ground to give that immediate support. It also gave us an opportunity to really push EAP or allow people to get access to it or other numbers that we think might have been helpful at that time, talking to our medical professional that people had questions about, if my husband or partner or wife come home with COVID, how do we treat that? So we wanted to make sure we had as much information available as possible.
And I know we've touched a little bit on a couple of the areas of wellbeing, but you just touched on EAP. So I'm sure collectively EAP, your medical people, HR, safety, all those frontline leaders were so important to your response generally around wellbeing. Did you find that people needed that extra support from a mental health and wellness perspective? Or did you find that people were pretty pragmatic? And that's one thing that often is characterized by our industry is people, you know, as long as they know what's going on, they can get on with it. What did you find, Amanda?
Again, I think for the people that spent that time in their room, they were incredibly patient and like you say, pragmatic around, they knew there wasn't much to do other than get through it. Along with EAP, we had care packs go to rooms with puzzles and games, and there was, you know, lollies and food. We just made sure that we opened up. We have a site shop. We made sure that everything that was in there was available for people to be given, so it wasn't just the standard, you know, crib you're getting. If you wanted something more, we expedited that. Food's an important thing in the village, and we wanted to make sure that we got that right after the delays of the first couple of days. So just making sure people were busy as much as they could be in their room was important. You know, Sudokus, all those sorts of things were given in the care packs.
That's amazing. And reflecting on the things we started with, your practices, your policies, what do you reflect on as being kind of the most important and things that you think that, you know, you all did really well that you're going to take forward to further planning or, you know, heaven forbid, any other type of emergency situation?
Definitely the biggest learning for us as a company. I think we certainly ran a similar scenario at our other site just to trial it with the same amount of people, and not that we put people in their rooms, but how did the catering perform? How did the cleaning perform? We've tested that now. So we know what that looks like from a execution perspective, and we've had some lessons learned about that. Certainly, we've reflected post-event on all of the people that, although we all recognise that the people on site had the hardest time in there, but people supporting the emergency response off-site, and how were they doing in that situation? How were their stress and fatigue levels over that period? And we actually had to organise an emergency response debrief for people that weren't actually on site after that time through management referral, because it was hard to de-stress after that period.
Yeah, really heightened period, I can imagine. And I just want to touch on that. Some of these things take time to unfold after the event in terms of the way that things happened or the way people felt about that. With a bit of distance, is there anything that's come to light that you've been able to reflect on, either from a positive perspective or from a challenge perspective?
Certainly from a positive perspective, the resilience of that workforce, we can't thank everybody for what they endured that, at that time. And, you know, they returned to work. We basically restarted operations within the next 2 days of everybody getting out of Super Saturday. Super Saturday was when we had everyone fly off, and we'd never had 11 planes leave before.
Wow.
So it was a very intense airport day. But certainly we had people that were willing to either extend their roster or return after a couple of days break to ensure that there was no interruption to production, which is phenomenal. We have lessons around our COVID testing protocols now. Now we do have PCR testing before leaving to travel to site. And we actually have a PCR machine on site now. So not waiting for results to come, to be flown out and coming back to get a really quick turnaround has been, you know, a really good investment for the site team. Look, over the past 18 months, and every resource company has had similar experiences, I'm sure, but because of the nature of Tanami, the Granites mine site, we've had split crews, we've had extended rosters, and we've had a number of employees hub in Darwin. You know, our people made so many personal sacrifices in the last 18 months or more, whether it be working away from family, remote working, or quarantine in between site and home. And I think that for me has been really overwhelming to the commitment that our people will give us.
Yeah, wow. And what a lovely reflection in terms of a testimony to your workforce and contractors. And I want to touch on the process that you touched on about restarting the mine. Apart from the rostering, were there any other challenges from a health and safety perspective that you needed to overcome?
If I can mention, maybe we had cleaning protocols in place, and we certainly had areas of where you could distinguish who was on what site, splitting crews and those sorts of things. But making sure that you have all the cleaning equipment and supplies that you need on site ready to go was a huge learning. We had issues with road transport at that time due to weather and a few other things. And also, you know, I talked about food, having a 3-day ration pack as a store item on site would just alleviate any delay with release to kitchen. And,
okay,
you know, people would get their food and they'd know that it was there. And just having those stores available so that you don't have a worry. I remember being in Queensland, and for flooding we would have, you know, these little ration kits. And I think, you know, that was one of the things that we've proactively managed to resource now.
Wow, that sounds interesting. You talked about having your own PCR testing machine on site. I just don't know how common that is across the industry now, but I would imagine that puts you in a really great position as all the states open up, because obviously the amount of vaccinations in communities now is very different to when you had your positive case on site. But I would imagine that that means that you've been able to adapt and change some of your emergency response plans in relation to COVID just through the time that it takes to get results back to people.
Yes, it certainly has made it a lot quicker, but we haven't really changed our approach. We haven't got to a stage where we think we could operate under waiting for those conditions. Our first response would still be to isolate people and work crews until everything is known, that we have a really good handle on contacts, for example. So we certainly feel like it's another level of understanding, but yeah, we're certainly going as hard as we can as we were before, because we can't afford to have a slight miss, as it will just shut everybody down.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my last questions I've got is, we've talked a lot about what happened on site and we talked a lot about communication lines, but as a workforce and people executive in the industry, do you have any advice for your peers and colleagues about what it was like, you know, whether it's Perth or in Brisbane or Melbourne, wherever people's head office is, what was it like running the head office teams when you weren't there, you weren't on the ground, and you were trying to do everything you could to support them? Can you give some advice about what it was like and the types of things that you found useful on reflection?
The first thing that comes to my mind is we were all so engaged to try and get things done that you have to assume that everybody who gets involved is coming at it with positive intent. Mm. So, you know, being really, really formal about who's giving the instructions and who's following up, being incredibly clear on when actions are due back, so that other people don't feel as though they have to jump in or rescue, or that that's not being looked after, because everybody's all in at once. And I think, again, in the first 12 hours of that, we had to really work through who assumed what roles and what control looked like. And now looking back, I think we would have had an A and a B team because of the fatigue that we put our initial team under to get those things in place. We probably should have had people come in and be an understudy when people needed a break.
Yeah, great advice, great reflection. Thank you so much, Amanda. And thank you so much for sharing what I'm sure was a both exhilarating, exhausting, scary, challenging, but also it sounds like your workforce, the way they responded would have been also a bit of an inspiration in terms of what you were having to work through and what you eventually came through. So congratulations again on the work you and your organization and your team specifically have done in this. And thank you again for joining us on Resource People Podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. And again, thank you for allowing Newmont to channel through Emma to get the lessons learned out to the greater resource sector.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Resource People Podcast. I hope you enjoyed hearing more about such a critical health situation within our industry, and perhaps even have some key takeouts that your organisation could consider. A huge thank you to Amanda for being so candid in sharing the experiences of her and her team and ensuring the broader industries can learn from how Newmont handled this situation. I hope you enjoyed the episode and look forward to you joining us next time on Resource People Podcast.
AMA acknowledges and pays respects to the traditional custodians of the land from which the Resource People Podcast was recorded from today, both the Turrbal and Yugara people. AMA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which you are living, learning and listening to this podcast from today. We pay our respects to elders both past, present and emerging.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People Podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.